This is the Kona Edge, the home of Ironman triathletes who dream of qualifying for the World Championships on the Big Island.
Welcome onto this edition of the Kona Edge. It's awesome to have you with us, man, coming to you from an absolutely gorgeous Cape Town in South Africa, middle of winter, and I'm just looking out of my studio window. It's blue skies, sunshine. I know there is a cold front coming and there should be some rain on the way soon, but it's magnificent here at the moment. Managed to get a beautiful run in this morning, so life is good. And it's, I hope it's good where you are as well. We've got another amazing guest to join us on this edition of the Kona Edge. Today we'll head to the United Kingdom to catch up with Roger Canham to find out a little bit more about his journey into Kona and up to Kona. And he had an incredible race at Ironman Texas earlier in 2016. And we'll speak about his finisher photo. You've got to check it out if you haven't seen the show notes for this episode of the Kona Edge. It is one of the best I have ever seen. But before we get into that, don't forget, coming up fairly shortly, it is the 2016 IM Summit. We've got some unbelievable speakers coming your way. If you want to find out more about it, the website to get to is theimsummit.com. That's theimsummit.com. All the details are there. And yeah, make sure you get onto the early bird list. We'll be letting you know who the speakers are over the next few weeks via our email newsletter. So make sure you get onto that list, okay? But without further ado, let's get straight into today's episode of the Kona Edge. Well, we head to Rutland in the United Kingdom now, and we're joined by Roger Canham. Roger, welcome. Thanks for joining us here on the Kona Edge.
Great, good. Pleased to be here.
Roger, I came across you. I'm trying to think. It was through Facebook, but I saw the most epic finisher photo from Ironman Texas in 2016. Obviously, we've spoken about it a few times here on the podcast. The weather was ridiculous, but your finisher photo at that race has got to be one of the most epic photos I've ever seen.
Yeah, thanks. It was quite an emotional journey, actually. It was an adventure from start to finish that race. You know, 3 weeks out, it looked like they might abandon the whole race. And eventually, we ended up with a bike course that was 95 miles with effectively 95 turns in it. So that was interesting. And 2 days before the race, they changed the swim route because part of it, the water wasn't deemed to be fit to swim in. And then, yes, the last 2 miles of the marathon was biblical in terms of the conditions that we had. And yes, I was desperate to get to the finish line, if only to get out of the hail and the wind and the rain. It was quite something.
What I'm going to do is, if it's okay with you, I'm going to nick that photo and pop it into the show notes of this episode because I think it is well worth a share. It is, I love it. And it's races like that that make for the best stories.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Every Ironman race has its own memories, but this one I think will stand out. Whilst not my most competitive performance, it was certainly one that, yes, will live with me for a long while. I'm absolutely thrilled to get across the line, yeah.
I'm sure. Let's take a step back. Where did your journey into triathlon all start?
Well, my sporting background really was rugby union. That's really what I played, you know, from school and for a few years afterwards. And I really got into endurance sports, I guess, having broken a few bones, too many really. I kind of thought, well, I ought to give up with a young family, taking time off work through injury. So I did a bit of running, did a bit of marathon running, just two or three, and then got the inevitable runner's knee. And so, okay, I want to carry on doing endurance sports. What could I do? And just pitched in with, you know, triathlon was quite a new thing in the early 2000s. Had no idea what I was doing. Couldn't swim more than a length without getting out of breath, and I didn't own a bike. So it was quite a quick learning curve. I did my first triathlon. I think it was in 2001, 2002, and absolutely loved it. I was hooked on not just the sport, but also the people that were in the sport. Very welcoming, always willing to share their experiences and encourage new people to really engage with the sport. And that to this day really is something that I love about the sport, just the people in it, and also the travel, of course. Mm.
Let's just touch on the rugby. We've got a fairly large international listenership to this podcast, particularly in the United States. Rugby's not the biggest of sports, and for those who don't know rugby, it's 80 minutes, 2 40-minute halves. It's pretty physical. It's taxing on the body. Stop starts. It's not the endurance. I mean, you wouldn't typically equate an Ironman with a match of rugby. What position did you play in union, Roger?
So I was a number seven, which is the guy that spends the whole 80 minutes chasing the ball. So there's a lot of running, and my I was never the greatest rugby player, but I just figured, look, if I could be the fittest guy on the pitch and keep running in the second 40 minutes, I was going to start to do a bit better than the other guys that were flagging. So I guess that kind of spoke to my sort of endurance part of my physiology, really. So yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, for those also don't know, number seven, a flank is not the smallest of guys on the pitch at any given time. I mean, from a physical frame perspective, you're not built like a Kenyan, if I can put it that way.
No, absolutely not. Now, I was a bit heavier back in those days, but even then, yes, in terms of my ability to progress in the sport, it was limited by my size. I am 6'2", and I probably was a couple of stone heavier than I am now, but yes, 10 years of endurance exercise tends to slim me down a little, that's for sure.
Yeah, I feel your pain, Roger. I was a prop, so I was definitely not built. I was built to scrum, and that's all I was built to do. And yeah, coming into triathlon, it's challenging, to say the least. I'm also pretty tall. I'm 6'6", not the smallest of frames. So yeah, I get what you're saying. But it's an incredible environment to be in. Did you struggle making that transition from an 80-minute rugby game to going up to a however many hour Ironman? It's a big jump.
It was, but you know, like most people, I guess, well, probably less so these days, but certainly back then when Ironman was still relatively a small part of the sport, you would do the sort of the progression through sprint, through Olympic, and I was a dreadful swimmer, so I guess duathlon was probably my favourite sport back at the start. And so I guess 2001, my first triathlon, my first Ironman wasn't until 2004. So, and that was just one and done. Get the box ticked. And I think every triathlete secretly harbors an ambition to tick that box. So yes, endurance was something that I built over a number of years. But yes, I mean, you know, trying to stay fit for 80 minutes still required a fair bit of running sort of outside of the game itself.
You mentioned ticking that box and making the decision to do your first one. Can you recall the mental fortitude it took to talk yourself into doing something as crazy as an Ironman?
Well, I've always been keen for a challenge, always wanted to get stuck into something that is just a bit more than I'm presently doing. So it very much was there to be done. And so I guess I had the opportunity, a bit more time to train. Just took it, did Austria in 2004. And I think I walked probably half the run, except the parts where my family were watching. And when I knew where they were watching, I made sure I was running that bit. And of course, the last kilometer down the finish chute.
As one has to, you can't walk down that finish chute.
Absolutely not, no.
Let's talk about once that block is ticked and you then start thinking, hang on a sec, this was actually quite fun, I want to go back and do another one.
Well, I'm not quite sure quite fun was necessarily the way I'd put it, but certainly a challenge that I didn't think I'd really cracked. But I left it alone for 2 or 3 years and went back and did Lanzarote in 2007, which is a hot, very hilly course, probably still one of the toughest on the circuit. And I think I did well enough there to think, okay, well, my endurance background probably means I'm suited to this distance. Certainly the shorter swim relative to the bike and the run was something that appealed to me. Racing Olympic distance, obviously swimming is much more important. So definitely, Lanzarote 2007, I thought, okay, well, I need to have another crack at this. I think I can do okay. And that's when the journey started, really.
When did you start harbouring Kona ambitions? I mean, did you realise early on in your tri career that, hang on a sec, I'm pretty decent within my age group, or did that come with time as well?
I think it was something I probably fantasised about and dreamed about, but never really thought I'd be a serious contender, having not really got close to the podium in my races. And in 2008, when I did New Zealand, which was a terrific race in Taupo, absolutely beautiful. Of course, you race hard and you do your best and you push yourself to the line. And I came in seventh. I never really contemplated whether I'd be able to get to Hawaii. So getting that slot in New Zealand was a massive surprise and obviously thrilled. It was, you know, once you're thinking about the Big Island, it's almost all your Christmases come at once. It was absolutely fantastic moment.
Let's touch on just the sort of what it takes to get there and yes, it's a journey. It doesn't happen overnight. From a work and family perspective, that's probably the thing that most age groupers struggle with, in my experience, is getting that balance right of being able to juggle the amount of training you need to do, but also to keep things sort of balanced on the home front.
Yeah, it's very tough. And I think getting to the Big Island, in some respects, requires an enormous amount of focus. And yeah, a bit selfish sometimes as well. You know, you have to prioritize your sessions, getting the work done, In some respects, I think intrinsically, training for an Ironman and if you want to go to the Big Island, it's fairly clear what you need to do, and that's just work hard. And it's being efficient with your time management, shoehorning the right sessions into your schedule during the week. And as you said, not compromising everything, but inevitably, the people around you have to understand that it's an important goal for you and they have to be very supportive, and also your friends. And if you haven't got that environment, yeah, it does make it very tough. If you're going to prioritize work and family ahead of your training sessions the whole time, then it's going to be very tough to get in the Big Island for sure.
Work-wise, what do you do for a living, Roger?
I've got a property business and two or three other things. So I'm lucky that two or three days a week I can work from home, and a couple of days a week I tend to be working away. But, you know, the great thing with running is you can throw a pair of shoes in the bag, and wherever you are, you can get out the door. Even if it's at 4 o'clock in the morning, 5 o'clock, you can get out there and get that run session in. So again, it's being smart with your diary and scheduling in the workout so that they fit around that diary from a practical perspective.
It's funny you say that, and you mentioned the word diary. It was a couple of weeks ago I had a chat with Natalie Gaskin, who is from New Zealand, and she was saying just how important the time management side of things are for her. And that was one thing that she said. It was just getting those priorities right. Are you that sort of, I don't want to use the word pedantic, but that's probably the word I should use. Like, do you sit down once a week and go, okay, this is what I need to do from a training perspective, this is what I need to do from a work perspective, and this is what I need to do from a family perspective, and have your week planned out, and then during the week you just work that plan?
Yeah, absolutely, yes. I mean, it goes much further than that, Brad, rather than even just on a weekly basis. I mean, I know I'm going on holiday for a couple of weeks in July with the family. So that's going to be a swimming and a run block, because I know I won't have access to my bike. So, you know, the 2 weeks before is going to be a big bike block. So it's almost also periodizing your training with those sorts of commitments, because, you know, you're going to go away with the family, you're going to go on holiday. And so you just have to figure out how that then works with the overall training plan. But also on a week to week basis, you're right. You know, it's always the long bike ride on a Saturday. It's always the run on a Sunday. But then, you know, if there are two or three key sessions, where are they going to fit so that you can execute them well? And then, if you like, the other stuff, how does that fit around your diary? Definitely. They say, you know, if you want something done, give it to a busy person.
So true that. So true. And it's funny, Roger, you say that. I mean, with what I'm doing here on the Kona Edge, I get to chat to so many great athletes. And one thing that I'm finding is they're not just great athletes. They're great people. They've got a pretty successful life outside of triathlon as well. Very few of them are sort of run-of-the-mill, average, ordinary, everyday people. They are succeeding in every aspect of their life. Do you think that's a prerequisite and that helps?
I think you have to be somebody that's very focused and very organized to get it done. It does take a lot of time. It does impinge on other areas of your life. And actually, to get that balance right is really tough. So you have to be organized. You have to be focused. And yeah, every second of every day counts to do all the different things that we're required to do, not just in training, but work-wise and with the family. So yeah, I think there are people that are very driven to goal, because if you're not driven to get it done, you'll start to miss those sessions, and whilst you can miss one or two, you know, cumulatively you start to get behind the curve, you start to cram, and guess what? You get injured. So you do need to be very organized, that's for sure.
Absolutely. You mentioned that the traveling side of it is quite a big plus and a huge upside. You've raced around the planet. We mentioned Texas, you've mentioned New Zealand, Lanzarote. Races, I mean, how many do you tend to do, I'm talking full Ironmans, a year?
I guess two stroke three. There's no rule of thumb. I guess this year will just be two. I think I did three last year. That was throwing in Roth as well. Again, a bucket list race. So I tend to plan, if I can, an early season Ironman and an attempt to qualify early in the season. It helps me just plan out the rest of the year. And I've been fortunate to have been to Hawaii for the last few years in October. So kind of the year is set already once you figured you want to quantify early, and then if you're lucky enough to get to Hawaii, that goes in the diary. And then I guess it's a bucket list race for the travel, sort of in the middle of the year, but sufficiently early so that it doesn't impact your training for Hawaii. Yeah.
Well, I need some advice here. I'm planning a holiday, and I'm trying to convince my wife we need to plan it around an Ironman. You've obviously got this down, Pat. Give me some advice that I can run this by my wife.
Well, yes, it's... Yeah, find a nice hotel. I've lots to do. And don't be too anal about your training when you're out there, that's for sure.
I love it. Roth, you mentioned bucket list race. I mean, you must have a few, and they are. There's some incredible races around the planet. What's still on the list of races that you want to do?
Well, actually, Texas, interestingly enough, was one that was on my list. Yeah, there's new ones springing up every year, I guess. I've done two or three in the States, then Arizona, Florida, Texas now, Utah, when it was around. I guess some of the old school ones, I'd love to do Placid, Coeur d'Alene. It's a shame Penticton is obviously going by the wayside now, because that's an iconic race. And then you get to places like Wanaka, some of the really beautiful locations that I know isn't an MDOT race, but nevertheless is long distance. So yes, there are a few more to do yet. Yeah. Maybe get down to Brazil, do one of the races down there. There's lots of lovely places to go, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Can you remember your first one clearly? I mean, does it stick out in your mind still?
They're all very memorable. Yes, I mean, there are elements that you can remember in Austria, swimming down the canal. It's fantastic. Going up the hills on the bike course when it was a different route to it is now. So every one is very memorable. But I guess when you're getting very focused on an outcome, you tend to spend less time looking around and enjoying the countryside, and more about just getting the job done, which is a shame. So the build up to races are more important in terms of enjoying the area that you're in. And they've all been fantastic. I mean, even a race I did in China, maybe 6 years ago now. Yeah, that was memorable, but for lots of different reasons. But a very challenging course. Utah was beautiful. South Africa, of course, I've done that a couple of times now. And Port Elizabeth is fantastic. I love that course.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I've been lucky enough to race in Europe as well, but I love PE, and I'm probably biased because it's my home race. But yeah, it is absolutely spectacular. As far as Kona goes, I mean, that's also a very unique experience. It must be pretty surreal the first time you arrive on the Big Island after you've qualified and you're there with the best in the world. What goes through your mind?
Yeah, it was interesting. The first time on the Big Island, I guess having then fought to qualify and then for the next two or three years being very anxious to qualify because my first experience was so good. In an odd sort of way, it's quite stressful trying to qualify for that race. You're very anxious about your performance on the day, where you are in the field, how you're doing. But actually, once you get to the Big Island for your first race, it's almost a lap of honor. I'd almost encourage people to look, relax. You're not trying to qualify for anything. You're not trying to gun for a time. That is the moment, I guess, in any career where you can just suck it up, just enjoy the atmosphere, enjoy cycling down the Queen K, have a look around and think, wow, this is the World Championships. This is really cool. Mm. And I guess I'm still a bit goofy when it comes to going to Hawaii. It is a really special experience. And whilst I've been lucky enough to go a few times now, it's fantastic every time I go. It is a wonderful opportunity.
Never gets old.
Absolutely not, no. It never does, no. I missed 2013. And I very clearly remember in 2014, my first training ride down the Queen K, and looking around and thinking, wow, I know why I think this is such good fun. I know why I keep coming back, because it is just an amazing feeling.
As far as ambitions on Kona, you mentioned that first one for people who go the first time. And an Ironman's an interesting race, Roger. I'm sure you'd agree that I think it's difficult to have the perfect race. There's always something in that race where you think, you know what, I could have done something slightly different or slightly better there. I don't know. I've never had a perfect race. I don't know if you have. But do you think that's one of the things that keeps you coming back to Kona 2, knowing that you're on that stage with the best triathletes in the world on the same day, on the same course, and things don't always go according to plan, and you want to come back and see if you can maybe that little stretch go a little bit quicker or change things up slightly here? Is that what keeps you coming back?
Yeah, definitely. It is trying to finally crack the perfect performance there. And after every race, not just in Kona, actually, but I always write a very detailed report, a list of things that I could do better. And we're always in that world of, okay, well, can we fine-tune here or fine-tune there? And I've had some performances where I've been very close to getting that sort of elusive podium in Hawaii. And you know, maybe 2 minutes, 3 minutes, and you look back and people say, well, surely you could have found 2 or 3 minutes. But you know what? When I've crossed that line and I'm sat in the recovery area, there are not 2 minutes out there that I could have got. You've raced yourself into the ground. So, but inevitably, you do look back and think, okay, well, can I sharpen up on the bike? What can I change my nutrition? Did I run the splits right? Coming down the Queen K on the way back. What, there are always things that you question. But absolutely, on the day, in the moment, if somebody comes up to you as you're going up Palani, can you go a bit harder? Absolutely not. You're all in. But when you look back, when you're on the plane flying back, you are frustrated that you couldn't have squeezed that little bit extra out. So yes, it's a constant challenge, absolutely.
What's the biggest life lesson Ironman's taught you?
I've been surprised sometimes at how I've managed just to keep going, how to keep pushing, and we all have those moments. A friend of mine was doing Ironman France this weekend, and he ran a 3:07. I congratulated him, and he said, "Look," he said, "I had a real meltdown on that run, and I think I could have gone better." I said, "Look, I have a meltdown just about every time I do an Ironman run, but I guess I've drawn confidence from the last two or three that I've done, that I've managed to get through that and end up with a reasonable performance." And I've reflected on that and thought, well, actually, that takes a bit of doing. And very much Ironman, I guess, is about problem management and the mental side of it. The physical side of it actually is, you know, there's a stack of books and websites that will tell you how to physically prepare for an Ironman. And yeah, that's pretty well understood these days. But the difference is how you cope mentally with the situations as they arise, how you problem solve, how you get yourself through those dark moments. I guess that's the difference between the people that perform at the top level and the people that are still trying to break through.
And that's an experience thing, Roger. I'm sure you'd agree. The more you put yourself in those positions and in those moments, the better you react to them. What are some of the things that you've done and changed from a mental perspective in your triathlon career that you feel has benefited you over the years?
Yeah, I guess, yes. When I first started to get me through a race, it was more blood and guts. Just, okay, just keep pushing, just sort of shut down mentally and just keep pushing and pushing. And it hurts, but okay, you'll get through it. I guess it is much more thinking about problem solving now. When I feel that I'm distracted or I'm not focused or the pace is dropping, I guess stop and start to think why that is. You know, what is it about how I'm feeling right now that I can change? Do I need to eat something? Do I need to slow down? Do I need to get more aero? Do I need to drink something? Do I need some caffeine? It's more approaching it as a problem solving exercise than necessarily just forcing the body through the moment you're in. You need to do that at times, of course you do, but I guess it's starting to understand the different parameters that you can change, which will put you in a better place.
Do you approach your entire Ironman, I don't want to say training regime, but the training around a race in that sort of way as well, where if you look at a race and go, well, maybe I can go 2 minutes faster on the run or 5 minutes on the bike, do you go as a problem, like, where did it go wrong? How can I fix that in the next one? Is that how you approach things?
Yes, it's always important to do the analysis post-race and just figure out if things haven't gone as you wanted them to, okay, well, why might that be? What was it at that time? And that's why post-race, it's important to just to do that brain dump as close to the race as possible. What was I thinking at that point? What was going through my brain? How was my body reacting? What was I drinking? What was I eating? And are there any correlations then with performance that I can then think about for next time around? So yeah, I've changed, you know, the way I eat on the run. Quite a lot. Quite early on, I managed to get a formula on the bike that worked. But yes, you know, you're constantly thinking, okay, well, could I push harder on the bike? Well, you know what? I've got to try that next time and see what happens. And then sort of measure the success of that particular strategy. But I've been horribly consistent in Hawaii in a way, and I need to do something different to really start to push through. So. There's a good thing about having a race plan. I guess the important thing is to change it up and try different things.
Yep. Let's talk about age. Unfortunately, we're all getting older day by day. How do you sort of counteract the effects of aging on your performance? Is it something that bugs you, or is it, you know, it is what it is and we'll just keep on keeping on?
Yeah, I guess I still consider myself new to endurance sports. I mean, I've been doing it 10 years now, but I still think that I can get quicker, I can do better. At least I have to keep kidding myself that's the case anyway. So I don't necessarily have strategies for combating my age. I'm still working hard to get faster on the run. I'm still working hard to figure out how to bike well, and clearly there's a huge opportunity to swim better. And you know, that takes multiple years, I guess, to get better at swimming. So. No, I just see there's opportunities to continue to improve it. I don't see age as something that's going to slow me down as such.
Are you self-coached, or have you gone out and got some help, Roger?
The last 3 or 4 years I've been self-coached, but this year I'm working with Jim Vance to see if he can get me on the podium in Hawaii. So we're 3 or 4 months into that relationship, and it's great, really challenging me, really getting me to do different stuff. which is the object of the exercise. Inevitably, if you do what you've always done, you'll get what you've always got. And I've absolutely recognized that I need to change some things up, take some risks, try some new things, some new methodologies. And it's really interesting and really challenging, and I'm loving it.
As far as racing around the planet, you obviously get to race in different conditions. One thing that a lot of athletes, particularly from the UK, struggle with is the change in heat. Is that something that you struggle with racing in Kona, or are you quite comfortable racing in those sort of conditions?
I'm fortunate in that probably the Ironmans that I do now tend to be in hot places. This year, Arizona. Last year, South Africa. Obviously, Hawaii. And so I guess whilst I wouldn't consider myself good at racing in the heat, I've figured out how to deal with it. And I have a strategy, a protocol I use when I'm racing in those conditions. And like most things, if you've got a formula that's working, then stick to it, refine it, of course. And so whilst I love racing in the UK, and I've done that a couple of times at Ironman, racing abroad in the heat, I guess, because I've figured out how I deal with it, gives me a slight advantage when racing other athletes that perhaps aren't quite as well prepared.
Do you like mixing things up from a type of race perspective as far as terrain goes? Or do you tend to find one that sort of suits you? I don't know if you like fast and flat, or if you like pretty hilly or slightly undulating, and then you pick races on those sort of criteria? Or do you just go, you know what, that looks like a cool place, I want to go do that race? We're not too phased about what we're going to be doing on the day.
I guess I favour hilly courses if I can find them. I just think it's a real leveller for the bike, actually. On flat courses, it's difficult with a number of people on some of these race courses now. It's hard for the draft busters to control what everybody's doing. And I get very downhearted when I see packs of people riding along. Ostensibly don't seem to be too worried about the fact that they're sat on each other's wheel. And it's very difficult for the guys. You can't get enough marshals out to sort that sort of thing out. And if athletes are of a mind that they're willing to do that, then there's little you can do to combat that as an athlete trying to race in the right way. So the other thing you can do is just race hilly courses, which actually breaks all of that up and makes it a much fairer race. So just from a racing perspective, I guess hilly courses, and if it's tough, you know, great to have more of a challenge. So I tend to race hilly courses because it's both challenging and a much fairer test of each athlete's abilities.
Let's talk about PBs. Are you one that chases times, or is it a case of, you know what, I'm chasing a qualification spot, I need to make sure I win my age group or at least finish second, however many spots they are, and you do what needs to be done from that perspective on race day? Or do you go in there and go, this is what I'm chasing today, and make sure you hit the time, and if that's good enough to qualify, then so be it?
Yeah, you figure out what needs to be done, and whilst I'd never predetermine what sort of time I'm going to aim for on a particular course, of course, in your head, you've got some idea, but time and time again, I've sort of had benchmark times for a particular course and felt, oh, I'm behind and it's not going as well as it should do. And guess what? At the end of the race, you realize everybody's having a tough time. It's particularly windy or particularly hot. And so it's very difficult to take those sorts of numbers into a race and use them usefully, because there's so many different parameters that can impact you. But you know, Hawaii this year was my slowest time, and I was seventh. And I've only ever been seventh once before, and that was with the time 20 minutes quicker. So just the conditions are so variable that I think it's dangerous sometimes, from a mental perspective, to go in with too many ideas about what sort of time is going to make it. You just got to get in there and just race as hard as you can.
Let's talk about racing as hard as you can. One thing I've picked up with age groupers who qualify for Kona is their mindset of how they approach a race is very different to the guys and girls who aren't chasing spots in Kona. How do you approach a race? Is it a case of, you know what, we're going to go as hard as we can and we literally can't go any harder? Or do you manage yourself and at times in that race push hard and then back off? How do you approach a race, Roger?
Yeah, I guess for me, I've always sort of advocated that the race doesn't really start till probably 25K in the run. So up until that point in time, holding back sounds a bit grand. You're never holding back in an Ironman race, but nevertheless, you are managing your effort. So racing with a power meter is great on the bike. I know very clearly what is within me and what is beyond me. And so you'll race to parameters. And I think most people understand that in terms of floors and ceilings on power ranges on a course and just managing your effort. So I guess the first half of the run, the first half marathon is just chugging out your normal sort of pace. And then the back half is when you would race and run. And you know, Unfortunately, the rolling starts have taken away a bit of the racing. But if I am able to race and see where other people in my age group are, then the back half of the run is probably where I decide whether I'm going to bury myself or just run it out. And it's a balance between the two. You'll run it out if you know you're in a good position to qualify. But then there's something else that says, you know what, I wonder how high up the field I can get overall. And that's often a challenge I'll take on as well.
Yeah, that's, I think, one of the things that keeps us coming back and doing these sort of races is the what if and how far can we push ourselves. What's still on the list of things that you want to achieve in the sport, Roger?
Right now I'm focused on Hawaii. Get a podium. I've been there 7 times now and 5 top 10s. 7th twice, 8th, 9th, frustratingly close to that podium. So there are 5 podium spots in Hawaii. So to sneak onto the stage would just be wonderful. And so right now that's something I've got to tick. Whether I'll be fortunate enough, I don't know. But I'll give it a good go anyway, and that's the objective for this year.
How frustrating is that? And not that there's anything wrong with the top 10 finish in Kona. I mean, that's pretty amazing. But you've come close so many times, it must drive you dilly.
Yeah, it's very frustrating. You have to be very careful as well with certain goals. Though I know in 2009, I think it was, where I was 7th. And I came away from the race disappointed. And then I look back sort of the couple of weeks later and thought, yeah, what a jerk. You know, you're 7th in the World Championships. Enjoy it. Enjoy that sort of experience and that achievement. And I think sometimes we can all get a bit too wound up, a bit too focused on a particular goal. And it takes away from the moment and joy of a particular performance. So whilst it's important and I'll give it my best shot, I won't let it spoil my day if it doesn't quite turn out.
We've got a lot of listeners who have qualified and raced on the Big Island, but the vast majority of the people who listen to this podcast are people who want to go and want to race in Kona. What's special to you about that race? I mean, what's the attraction that keeps you coming back?
It's just it is the top of the sport. There's no doubt about it. It's the blue ribbon event, and there's an element of kudos that comes with that, But the people you meet, you know, you'll sit at a breakfast table and you'll be sat around a table with like-minded people who think the same way as you. Now, whether that's a good way to think or not is another question. But nevertheless, the whole vibe, the whole energy of the place and the friendliness of the people is something else. It is unique. It's a bit corny. People say it's a unique race and a unique place, but it really is. The people you meet, the energy, the environment, you go past some of the big triathlon landmarks, whether it's swimming off Digne Beach, cycling down the Queen K, going up to Harvey, the Energy Lab. We all know some of these iconic landmarks in Kailua Kona. It's kind of cool. And every time you go and you meet other athletes, whether they're first timers or been there a few times before, we're all just still as goofy about it as if it's the first time. It really is really quite something, and doesn't feel particularly elitist. Of course, you get those people there who are strutting up and down Alihi Drive, but most people I meet are pretty grounded, actually, and actually really good fun people.
Well, Roger, best of luck in your final preparations. I say final, still a way to go when we record this to Kona 2016. It's been awesome catching up. I look forward to getting you on just to chat a little bit about the swim, bike, run and nutrition and some of the things you've done there. But thank you for sharing your story with us. And I can't wait to share that photo again of Texas with our audience, because that is got to be my photo so far of 2016. I get to see lots of Ironman photos, and that one takes the cake. It is brilliant.
That's very kind, Brad. Thank you very much.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Kona Edge. Don't forget to connect with us on social media. Simply search for the Kona Edge.